world. This is Lawrence. My name is Bill Lawrence, and you are listening to radio station WGXC 90.7 on your FM dial. And the name of the show is The World According to Lawrence. We are broadcasting live from the Hudson Studio, and with me is my producer and good friend, Deborah Kamica. I want to make this show a blend of commentary and talking to guests, maybe some call-ins someday, and of course, sound clips of politics, pop culture, current events, and science. This month and every month for the year, at least for 1 hour, you will hear my views and my take on the news and events that surround us as a nation, as a state, and as the counties of Greene and Columbia. In an effort to be at full disclosure and to be completely honest with my audience, I just want to go over some background and facts about me, Bill Lawrence. I am currently a Greene County legislator from the town of Cairo, which just so happens to house the main site of this radio station, WGXC, in Akron, New York. I am a Republican, and my views on this show are mine and mine alone. I am one of 14 other legislators representing Greene County, and although I am from District Number 8, Cairo, I will and do represent every one of the other 13 towns in Greene County. I am a retired school teacher from the Cairo-Durham School District, where I spent 35 years teaching chemistry, physics, math, photography, as well as a number of other subjects depending on the needs of the school at the time. I love talk radio, and I am glad that WGXC gave me this opportunity to air the show. I am kind of tired of the all Obama all day news, and I need a break every so often from the First Family, so here I am for an hour anyway talking to you in Columbia and Greene counties with a slightly more conservative take on the issues we hear about. And now for some disclosure from my good friend and colleague, Deborah Kamica.
Hi. As Bill said, my name is Deborah Kamica, and I work at Cairo Library. I'm also on WGXC Advisory Council and have been for a number of years now, and would like to take this opportunity to point out that WGXC is community radio. It is nonprofit. Nobody is paid. None of the programmers are paid. Anyone out there who's interested in volunteering to do a program or to help out in some other way, we'd love to have you contact us at 518-697-7400.
Thank you, Deborah. And Deborah, I'm going to give you the lineup for today's show with this little song right here. So just listen to this.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
So what did you learn in school today, Deb? School has opened throughout New York State. On September 4th, the grand opening of school for kids going back to grades kindergarten through 12th grade. Maybe for more than the first time, which sometimes it happens. However, we thought our show today would be about education, teachers, students, parents, and just give you our views on educational process for the year 2014. So what do you think, Deb? Did you recognize that song?
No.
That was Pete Seeger what did you do in school today, which I think is something that question every parent will ask their children, at least at the beginning of school. Sometimes they forget to ask it towards the end because they're sort of sick of school themselves. But students going back to school, and they're going to be asked about their school experience, and hopefully it's a good one. And I thought we'd start the show, Deb, by just going back a few years to the year 1895, when I was just a small kid then, of course. But
and I was even smaller.
You were real small. But in 1895, the big object of people going to school was to graduate from the eighth grade. And the eighth grade, of course, was the highlight of their career, graduation from eighth grade. And we often joke about people who have only an eighth grade education. But back in 1895, even up through probably the 1940s, an eighth grade education was really something. And I just have a final exam of an eighth grade class in Kansas City, Kansas, where they had to answer some of the following questions. And I thought Deb would try... You graduated eighth grade, right?
Yes, I did. And I would like to say that I think even in the 50s and going into the early 60s, there were jobs available to people with who had graduated from eighth grade.
Eighth grade, yeah. I mean, my parents, I think they had an eighth grade education themselves. I mean, and they were no dummies. Don't get me wrong. They certainly taught me a few lessons, that's for sure. But eighth grade graduation, here are some of the questions on the final exam in the 1895 eighth grade exam. For example, number one, give the rules for the use of capital letters. You know that answer?
I could probably do that one.
Okay, good. Then there's outline or define the following. Verse, stanza, and paragraph. I mean, a lot of kids have trouble, I think, with verse and stanza. Paragraph, they might understand. What are the principal parts of a verb? Give principal parts for the verbs lie, play, and run.
Mm-hmm.
That's grammar. Arithmetic. Name and define the fundamental rules of arithmetic. Here's a couple examples. A wagon box is 2 feet deep, 10 feet long, and 3 feet wide. How many bushels of wheat will it hold?
Oh, did you want me to do that in
no,
my head?
No, I can do it later. Use a calculator. If a district number 33 has a valuation of $35,000, what is the necessary levy to carry on a school 7 months at $50 per month and have $104 for incidentals? Oh my God!
These are great questions. Yeah. These are like real life questions.
What is a bank check, a promissory note, and a receipt? All right, those are pretty good questions.
Life skills.
Here's some history. History part of this test. And by the way, this test was 5 hours long. An hour for each of these sections. Relate the causes and results of the Revolutionary War. That's a pretty good question. Describe the three of the most prominent battles of the rebellion. Wow. And then they say, give me some event that occurred in the following dates. 1607, 1620, 1800, 1849, 1865. I always hated dates when I took school because I could never remember exactly what happened on them, except for my birthday, of course. But then there's geography. What is climate, and what does climate depend on? I think Al Gore, doesn't it? Depends on Al Gore. what use are rivers, and what use is the ocean? Well, that's a good question, too. And name and locate the principal trade centers of the U.S. Name all the republics of Europe and give the capital of each. This is an eighth grade test. Wow.
I kind of remember us having to know every country in the world and capitals. It was a big thing. I forget what grade. Eighth, ninth?
Yeah, I really think our
10th grade, I think.
American students don't know enough about Europe and the Mideast and the countries, the capitals, and the politics of those areas, because I think it's sort of something that people try to stay away from. I don't know why, but I know in class they call this, the European history type of classes are very tough. They're very difficult.
Right, and there's so many changes going on with some of these areas that it's probably pretty hard for the...
The countries are changing names all the time. Yeah, right. So we're going to talk about education, not the education in 1865 or 1849, but we're going to talk about education in 2014. It's a little bit more difficult. There's a lot of politically correct education going on, and whether or not that's happening in Columbia and Greene counties, I don't know for sure. I've been retired 10 years from education, but I do have some personal experience in the field, and I feel that kids are often turned off from school because of the way education is treated by either the principal, the principal, the district, the teachers, or their fellow peers as students themselves. So it's going to start this out. We're going to start out with this little song from Frank Sinatra.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant. But he's got high hopes, he's got high hopes, he's got high apple pie in the sky. Hope so anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
When troubles call and your back's to the wall, there's a lot to be learned. That wall could fall.
Once there was a silly old ram, thought he'd punch a hole in a dam. No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam, 'cause he had high hopes. He had high hopes. He had high apple pie in the sky. Hope so anytime you're feeling bad, instead of feeling sad, just remember that ram. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Okay, that was Frank Sinatra, and that song was called High Hopes. And every kid going to school, at least starting last week, had high hopes of doing well. I have no doubt about it. Everybody starts out that way, and teachers included. And we're hoping that the school gets off to a good start. Kids are excited about being in school, and often that goes astray in a few weeks. Sometimes in just a few days for students, they just either get... something happens, they dislike school, they dislike a teacher, they dislike a lot of things. And, of course, teachers get the same way. They get moody, and school's regulations are more than plentiful these days about what kids can and cannot do, what teachers can and cannot do. And now, of course, we've got Common Core taking over many of the curricula of high schools and middle schools and elementary schools. So, of course, that's going to be a problem that's going to be facing many, many parents in the future. And I thought we'd just talk about a few minutes Common Core. Common Core is one of those things which has a pretty bad name recognition status in people's minds. They hear it and they dislike it automatically because they've heard so much bad press about it. And I have no doubt there's some bad stuff about it. It might be good, it might not be, in terms of the overall effect on education. But you got to remember that education in New York State and, of course, in the United States of America is... very much public education. People who do not like public education take their kids out of the public schools, which is mandated, by the way, and then go to private schools or parochial schools or some other private at-home tutoring system, whether it's the parents or somebody's hired to do it. And so education rests strictly on the way parents feel about their schools. And the kids have little choice in this. They have to go to school one way or the other. And of course, Common Core might be one of those things that drives kids away from school. I don't know.
Well, I'm wondering if we can maybe give some kind of explanation or definition of what Common Core is. I mean, it's...
Yeah, well, Common Core was originally started by the governors of some 47 states or 40 states.
48, I think.
Yeah. And they got together. They hired a group to come up with a common curriculum, Common Core. That's it. Common Core is math, science, English, social studies, and language, I believe. And then, of course, those are the Common Core subjects that every student has to take. They came up with this common curriculum, but they never field tested it. They just sort of wrote it up, had it published, and then decided to implement it in their individual states. Mm-hmm. However,
the American Federation of Teachers was also involved in developing this. So it wasn't as though there wasn't import from different places. It wasn't just the governors.
Not according to what they're saying now. They're very much opposed to it.
Well, they may very well be, but initially... the American Federation of Teachers was involved in this development, and I think there were other people who were involved in it initially who have backed away from it, but there does seem to be a lot of misinformation out there. Hard to know when you read something what is absolute truth.
I mean, even today, the political parties today, there's even a line, a voting line, electorate line, called I Oppose Common Core. It's a line that you can get signatures on, and people can go and vote for your name because you oppose that particular type of educational system.
But I'm wondering how many people could actually define what it is. I mean, it's a set of standards. It's a set of goals. You know that were devised in an attempt to standardize what children should learn across the country. So, I'm not pretending to know everything about it, but one of the things with the math is so that everybody's at the same level of math and ninth grade, which is, as I recall, algebra. With the literature, I think the emphasis is on introducing more nonfiction type of reading. But as I understand it, the teachers are still setting their own curriculum. And they're doing their own lesson plans. This is not something that's coming down through Common Core.
All right. Now, speaking of Common Core math, Deborah has a question for you. What is 9 plus 6?
15.
Very good. You did it in about, 3 seconds, I believe. Now, according to an article I read, the Common Core method of adding 9 plus 6 can take you nearly a minute. And I got this little article from Yahoo, I believe. It was the... fact that there's a series of 6 videos which informs parents about the new way to add 9 plus 6 and other math problems. Because parents could be in for a surprise if they are merely familiar with the old boring way, which is to reinforce that 9 plus 6 is 15 again and again and again until it becomes second nature, which is called the rote method, memorization, your times tables, your addition, your subtraction, your division. With the Common Core curriculum, students need to understand why 9 plus 6 equals 15, according to this article. And a fourth grade teacher went through and demonstrated the way Common Core would do this. Here's how it works. The young learners may not altogether be comfortable thinking about what 9 plus 6 is, but they are quite comfortable about thinking about their friend number 10, right? And the novel addition method emphasizes 10 for younger students. We are working in a base 10 system, which is what we use in America. So if we can partner 9 to a number and anchor 10, we can help our students see what 9 plus 6 is. Now, I don't know if you can understand this already, but that's so far as
I'm stuck at, how do they know that number 10 is their friend?
I don't know. I think they just assume that. So here's how the teacher goes about that. She says, first, we're going to decompose our number 6. Now, that decomposing number 6 means that you draw 2 diagonal lines under the 6, and then you bring in the numbers 1 and 5, because, Deborah, as everybody knows, 1 plus 5 is?
Oh, sorry, 6.
6, right, okay, right. She would have gotten that soon. And then she says, once you do that, 1 plus 5, we know that number 6 is made up of these parts. One of them is 1, and one of them is 5. Then here's where you go from there. Now you're going to anchor that number 9 to a 1. Remember the 1 plus 5 is 6? Take that 1 and you anchor it to the number 9, which is the other part of this addition. Allows the students to anchor that number 1 to 9, makes the number 10, which is their friend, which, according to Deborah, we don't know why that's their friend, but it is. Drawing a big oblong circle around the 9 and the 1. That's 10. Now our students are seeing that we have 10 plus 5, she declares. This video declares confidently. She stutters a bit and adds, having that being more comfortable, seeing 10 plus 5 is 15 is much better than having 9 plus 6 equal 15. So there you go. There is the Common Core curriculum method of adding 9 plus 6. Took about, I would say, about a minute to add that up, to figure it out, whereas Deborah did it in 3 seconds. She is sharper than...
Having an off day.
She's having an off day, right?
But I'm sorry, where are you getting this information from?
This is a series of 6 videos that have been created for parents who are now going to be dealing with the Common Core. This one dealt with math.
Okay, and who's providing the videos? Who created? Who were the video makers?
The NBC affiliate WGRZ has created published a series of helpful videos to help parents with this kind of stuff.
Are there any videos that have been other kinds of videos that have been created by the people who devise the Common Core standards? Do you know?
I don't know, but I mean, a Common Core is a scheme to homogenize various K-12 standards around the country. They're, of course, facing a wave of criticism and opposition.
Well, but wasn't No Child Left Behind basically the same? Let's try to get everybody to the same standards. The difference was that No Child Left Behind was a federal program. This is not a federal program. And some states, have opted out.
Actually, I'd prefer the federal government stay out of education. I'd rather it be done state by state with some sort of common denominators. I mean, Common Core might be one of those denominators if we can get it to work correctly. Here's the criticism I have of this particular type of math problem, Deb, is that addition problem we just went through took about a minute, but you can also get an answer wrong and still get credit. Because as an example, this was a video which shows a curriculum coordinator in Chicago explaining that Common Core allows students to be totally right if they say 3 times 4 is 11, as long as they explain how they got that wrong answer. So I think that might be a little bit of a drawback.
Well, that's kind of interesting, explaining how they got the wrong answer. You said it was NBC?
NBC wrote
affiliate?
They did these.
Yeah, it'd be
videos.
Interesting to find out, where they got their information from and who was supporting the production of these videos.
Well, anyway, Common Core, don't let it distract you from having making sure that your students or your kids have a good time in school. And just to bring back some of the highlights of my high school and early learning experience, here's a little song by Chuck Berry.
The golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. If you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. See, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Romance. All day long you've been
the days of old.
Long live rock and roll. Thank you, Chuck Berry. That was, of course, School Days, Chuck Berry favorite of mine. And now that school has started, everybody sort of is very, you know, high energy, pumped up, ready to get off to a good start. One of the things you start with in school when you start in September is tests. Of course, testing now has become the common denominator for all school systems in New York State. They start out with tests and they end with tests. And, of course, you have the midterm test. And then so on and so forth. So the standardized tests that the state supplies or that the federal government supplies are having some people up in arms about too much testing for their children. And, of course, this may be the case where kids are just burned out from taking tests, not really understanding the value of this data that these tests give everybody. And there was an article in the New York Freeman, the Kingston Freeman, which said that New York standardized tests aren't good barometers, some Mid-Hudson school leaders say. And we're talking about Mid-Hudson school leaders, Kingston, and in that area, and of course, up here. So why aren't they doing the job they're supposed to be doing? Because according to one of the superintendents, the question design of the seventh grade math test was very similar in question design to my graduate level MBA class. And this is where students find that the reading level or the question content certainly is beyond what they've learned so far as seventh graders or sometimes younger. And the Aniora superintendent, Phyllis McGill, said the state's ongoing move to the Common Core curriculum has made it difficult to compare year-to-year test results. And as you know, I think Deb and I have talked about this before, many parents are pulling their kids out of taking the Common Core test. They've sort of, you know, withdrawing their students from participating, which I think doesn't give you the correct average as it should be from one school year to the next. But critical to all this, of course, in education is how does it relate to real life? And on these tests, these standardized tests, they're asking questions that have to do with real life situations. And the kids in grades 3 through 8 do not have a lot of real life experience with math. And they ask questions that have to do with home energy use. How many kids in grades 3 through 8 actually keep track of the energy use of their parents' home? I don't think very many do. I don't think they care as long as the energy's on. I think probably that's true for most Americans, right? They're more concerned about the energy being available than how much they use until, of course, you get the bill. But testing is another part of this Common Core situation, which sort of leads to revolts by parents and by students and some and by teachers groups too. But the point is, and I think the point I'm trying to make is that I don't think I'm opposed to Common Core if it's been implemented correctly. I think the name recognition has gotten a bad rap because of all the opposition to it, and that's only because of the way it's been implemented, not because of what it's trying to achieve. And one of the superintendents, Palladino, says he supports the efforts to improve test questions, but also supports Common Core as a way to deliver better educational programs to students. And he quotes, "I'm not against implementing the Common Core. I'm not against making changes, although I'm not for over-testing our students. We need to assess our students and see where they are, and we should be able to do our jobs better and so that students are ready to go out into the world," which I think as parents, as teachers, we all want to achieve, is a student that's well-prepared being in the world on his own.
You know, there's probably an analysis out there, I haven't seen it, comparing the number of tests that students took in the last decade compared to the previous few decades. It just seems like I've been hearing for years that the kids get have way too many tests they have to take.
Yeah, I remember as a teacher, they used to give eighth grade standardized tests, which I remember giving as an eighth grade teacher. And that eighth grade standardized test would happen sometime during the year, usually at the end of the year. But now they're doing tests at the beginning and at the end to see the improvement, which I guess makes sense, but man, it does take a lot of time out of your teaching day.
So easily double then what you're saying.
Oh, easily double, yeah.
Yeah, all right, anyway. There's a certain amount of anxiety attached to testing for the children, which is unfortunate, and I would imagine for the teachers too.
Teachers are now more anxious about it because they are now, they're evaluations are based on test grades and how well their students do, whereas before it was based on, you know, the overall impression that parents had of the teacher, that students did in their classwork. But the standardized testing is outside the control of teachers, besides content. And now that it was part of their evaluation, of course, then it can hurt a school district and hurt a teacher as well.
Well, I think they, the Common Core will suggest content, but it's up to the teachers to decide how they're going to teach.
Yeah, but the teachers don't write those tests. So therefore, if the Common Core curriculum is written by somebody on the outside who doesn't know the level of ability of the students and just is writing them based on their own impressions, it can be a tough test to take.
Yeah, and let's acknowledge that, you know, some areas have far less funds to invest in education than other areas. So,
yeah, I always laugh at the fact that, you know, Westchester schools and Carroll-Durham schools do not have a lot in common. I mean, their tax base is a lot different. The parents' jobs are a lot different. I mean, you cannot say a student in Carroll-Durham has the same advantages as a student in Westchester County.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is an impression the state has and the people who write the test have, but it's not true in reality. All right, we're going to give this is our hope for students in school today. Okay, that was Gloria Gaynor, and I Will Survive. We got off track a little bit there, but basically, kids go to school. Hopefully, they will survive the first few days, and they'll go through the year happy and content with their teachers and their school. But just in case you don't get the real picture, parents are number one importance in my mind for getting the educational benefits that all kids deserve. And then second in line are the teachers, and I think it's important to talk about teachers because they are with your kids sometimes more than you are during the day. It depends on whether they take sports or whether they're in clubs or whether they're on trips. But you're given the fact that a kid spends about 7 hours a day in school, spends a couple hours maybe doing homework, spends a few weekends on trips or in sports programs, you're going to find that your children spend a lot of time with teachers, and teachers make all the difference. I know when I was younger and I was being taught in high school and middle school that TVs were going to soon take over the job of teachers. I never believed that, because that interaction is so critical for a student to interact with a person, to answer questions, to give them information, to test out their skills, and to sort of lead them the way problem solving has to be led for people with young minds.
Well, that's kind of like saying what people were saying, oh, with the advent of computers, there would be no need for libraries. And recently I saw something where somebody said, you know, that's like, you know, handing somebody a calculator and say, learn math.
Yeah, right. I mean, the fact that computers now, of course, are in every home, just like a TV was in every home, doesn't mean that people don't read. People do read, and they do need help with using computers, number one, especially the older generation. So libraries have a very important function in that regard. They also have an important function being a storehouse of information, whether it's in book form, magazine form, or in computer form.
Well, and you know, actually, in Greene County, not everyone has a computer, and even if they do have a computer, they may not have access to high-speed internet, which is necessary for a lot of things that they might want to access.
That is so true. Broadband access is not everywhere in Greene County. As a matter of fact, we're working on that project right now, and in order to have broadband access, you have to have locations for signals to be sent, and Greene County, as you know, as a valley in a mountainous area, which can to be somewhat detrimental to straight line signals. So there's a problem there. And of course, not everybody can use a computer or internet.
Oh, yeah. We have frequently at the library where I work, people coming in needing to access a computer because they have to fill out an online application. And that's the only way to apply for some jobs now. You know, some of the local companies, Home Depot, Lowe's, McDonald's, their applications are all online. So we have folks coming in who really are not familiar with computers. So, you know, they need help accessing and successfully completing these online applications.
Yeah, if you're going to get a job in Walmart or any of those, you know, huge box store types of arenas, you have to go in, put your application on a computer. You don't go in, give it to an HR person. If you're going to, even me, getting Social Security, I had to do it online. I could not go to the office and just do it.
Yeah, I think unemployment, a lot of different types of benefit programs, you do need to access information and provide information through the computer.
Even if you go to your doctor, he does everything on the computer now. All your medical records are going to be in the cloud.
I was recently told that, and I'm like, I don't want mine, you know, online. They're online. We're only asking you, do you want access to it? So I'm like, even if I don't want mine online, can I opt out of having my medical records online? And they said no.
No, it's part of Obamacare now. It's got to be online.
They said no. They said we can give you a way to access it, but it's online.
So where do teachers have a place in this whole big world of technology and computer literacy? They play a very important part. I just wanted to talk about teachers for a few minutes because they somewhat get a bad rap too. Sort of like Common Core. They teachers are always being accused of having 180 days off. They have the summers off. They have a lot of holidays off, but they do a very, very difficult job. And if you've ever have a chance where you can substitute one day or 2 days in a school, you ought to try it, because I think it'll give you a different impression as to what teaching is all about. Teachers make it look easy. It's not easy. It's a lot of hard work. And those who do it well, because they put a lot of work into it. But I just got an article here from, where was this? I think it was on Yahoo News. It says, what if teachers were paid like athletes? Now, of course, athletes have been in the news lately, too. I think you've heard of Ray Rice.
Yeah, behavior.
Right? And I know that Michael Vick, of course, was a big name there. And then there's the guy who owned the team. He said the racist comments on the telephone. I mean, sports figures get paid a lot of money, and they are a lot worse role models than teachers are. Anyway, the average public school teacher makes about $52,000 a year, according to this article, for about 10 months of work. And the professional athletes, on the other hand, make about $3 million a year for 7 months of work. Now, of course, they have the there are fewer of them, I'm sure, but they also have less responsibility to you as a in taxpayer and as to an individual. You would think that the U.S. would be doing pretty well, because that's, for some people, $52,000 a year is pretty good pay, but the U.S. ranks number one also in student spending. We spend about $15,000 per year per student. I know in New York State that's true. So what would that, where does that rank us in terms of our ability to have highly educated students? Well, the U.S. ranks number 35 when it comes to math education. In other words, we're spending the most per student per year, but we're not getting the results that we expect from that big expenditure. And the question is, would paying teachers more give you better results? And I would tend to believe that would certainly help. Although I do know teachers who do not get paid a lot of money, who are excellent teachers, and they do a world of good for your children and for students in general. And sometimes money is not always the promoting factor that you think it is, but being paid a good salary is always nice. It shows appreciation. Because as a teacher, and I taught 35 years, thank yous did not come all that often. Maybe once every 5, 7, 10 years, you get a thank you from a student who said, boy, you were good for me, and I learned a lot in your class. But you don't hear it every day, as you might think. So the thing is, should we pay teachers $1 million a year, and then, of course, make them responsible, accountable for getting the results that we expect of our educational process? And, of course, according to this article, that would be a big factor. If we make it a very competitive profession. Athletes are in a very competitive profession. Let's make teaching a very competitive profession where we pay them a lot, and the results, of course, will depend on them doing the right thing for our students. And then the testing should be part of their evaluation.
You know, I think making it competitive, I don't know, is in theory not a bad idea. But other things need to be taken into consideration. So, you know, you do have always some people who are going to go into education to become teachers because they love the idea of having 3 months off during the summer. So, you know, get the grades, you know, and they get through the education program, they get their degree. But as somebody pointed out to me recently, there's no qualitative thinking that goes into this. So do you actually, you know, except for those few weeks of student teaching, which is very few, watch how these people interact with children. And if they are not interacting with children in a way that seems like maybe they would make a good teacher in a classroom, then regardless of how good their grades are or how, you know, much money they have to be able to afford to pay for their degree. There's got to be some people could, you know, be intellectually be able to speak to you about material and teach you about material, but they just can't connect with the children. And some of them, it seems pretty clear to me, having subbed in the school and having volunteered in schools for many years, it simply seem not to really like what they're doing. They don't seem to like the children. And that's not a blanket statement by any means. There's a lot of really great teachers out there. But I'm saying the good teachers are special. They have a special quality. They know how to connect with the children. They make all children, every child, feel special. And if there was some way that we could identify what that is, and like I said, maybe it means more observation on the parts of the schools when during student teaching, or maybe more student teaching, or maybe more just throw them into a classroom situation and just watch how they interact.
I agree with you. I think everybody has a teacher they remember. I mean, everybody has had a great teacher somewhere along the line, and they remember that person more than any other person in their lives, besides their parents. And that's because teachers have such a strong impact on student growth and student learning. And if somebody takes you and you connect with them and they lead you to a place you want to be, there's nothing more rewarding than that. And I think when I became a teacher, I had to go get my degree. student teaching was part of that program. You had to take your content courses, which were, I thought, very, 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 very deep. I had a very, very deep substance or content education in terms of chemistry and physics. Right now, today, I see a lot of educational guidelines are changing because students or who want to become teachers have to take all kinds of frivolous and I think extraneous courses to get this degree. And one of the things that I do agree with that they do have to do is they have to show a video of them teaching a class, which I think is a good way to pick out a good teacher and a bad teacher. But all these other courses have diluted that content depth, which I think a teacher needs in order to be effective. You can't just go and teach a class with a couple of courses. You have to have a depth in your field.
That's interesting.
But to be honest, I did not take student teaching myself. I was going to become a chemist and go work for General Electric or for DuPont or some other thing. But then, of course, that changed when I got married and had to raise a family, and I couldn't get in those programs as quickly as I would like. So I became a teacher, and at that time, they were desperate for teachers, so I got my classroom training in the classroom. But I agree with Deborah. I think classroom training by mentoring teachers is a
mentoring
good way to do
it. Mentoring is fantastic, yep. Because if somebody could have a mentor the first few years they were in school, then they could identify if there were particular problems with the teacher being able
and correct
to
them, sure.
Yeah, the teacher being able to communicate with the students, you know. I mean, I did substitute teach, and I was not very good at it, and I suspect that I would, no matter how much mentoring that I would get, I would never be particularly good at it. some people are natural, you know, or seem to be, or seem to have the qualities that would be most useful to a teacher, and I seem to be lacking those.
Yeah, one of the things a teacher does.
And I do like kids, but I don't particularly
you
like
love kids.
Particularly don't like a lot of them all in one space.
You got to like kids. You got to be able to excite them as to what you're teaching. And I think that takes a lot of work. You can't just go in that day and make up stuff. You got to be prepared. You got to be prepared with the answers before they ask the questions. And I found that teaching grades 8 through 12 in my career made the variation in the way students behave is very, very minimal. But the way teachers behave from grades 8 to 12 is maximum. I mean, there's a big, big difference in the way teachers treat students, but there's no need to because they're all exactly the same. They all just crave the same things. And I think a good teacher takes and makes every lesson individual, even though he's teaching to a bunch of students. And it's a hard task. It's really hard. Anyway, here's a little song. See if you recognize this one. Okay, I think you may recognize that as the music from Dead Poets Society. Robin Williams, now deceased, did a great job of being an outstanding teacher in that particular movie. And I think everybody would like to have a teacher like Robin Williams was in that that film. And, of course, great teachers. Like I said earlier, we all have one that we remember fondly as having been very important in our lives, having guided us to wherever we are today. And, again, just to give you some background on this, how would you spot a great teacher if you were looking for one? And according to another article that I've read about four ways to spot a great teacher, is the fact that you have to look for certain things. And as effective teachers are important, because once your children's with this teacher for whatever number of hours a week, they're going to find that with effective teachers, you get better test scores, you get better content-related instruction. You also get students who are happier with going to school. So I'm going to see, Deb, four things. See if you agree with these. In order to be a great teacher, the teacher should have an active intellectual life outside of the classroom. Now, I just don't know how a parent would recognize that.
Yeah, how would they?
But, I mean, they said that high SAT scores and high GPAs are not necessarily going to be making for better teachers, and I think that's true. I don't think you need high scores to become a good teacher.
No, because not everyone is good at testing.
Right. And so they're talking about teachers that travel a lot, they have fascinating hobbies, or they speak passionately about their favorite philosopher or poet. I'm not so sure a parent is going to be paying attention much to that, but that's one of the things that they say is representative of a great teacher. They also, great teachers believe that intelligence is achievable, not inborn. I tend to believe that. I think all students can learn. I know the No Student Left Behind was sort of a thorn in my side, because they sort of took that idea but really made it so comprehensive for every student that intelligence is achievable, but you got to have the tools to do it. You got to have the time to do it. But not every student learns the same way, and that's why there are so many different ways of teaching that a teacher has to be able to have the time to demonstrate that to his classroom. But the idea here is that effective educators reject the idea that smarts are something that only some students have. And I think that's true. I found in my career that all students have a particular ability to learn. It's just a matter of whether or not you can reach them, as Deborah said, to connect with them. All great teachers, according to this article, are data-driven. They like to test their students before and after content. And again, I'll be honest, I never did that. I always tested at the end. I always did quizzes. I always did questions and answers, and I always did tests at the end of a unit. I never did it at the beginning, because in chemistry, it's hard to know that stuff before you take the class. But that may not be true for social studies or for English or some other class.
Well, you know, I never had Bill as a teacher, but one of the things I've heard from a number of his students over the years is that he made learning fun, that he brought some humor to the classroom, and he made the subject interesting, and so.
Well, I always told my colleagues and my kids that the class has to be as interesting to me as it is to them. So I have to, if I'm going to teach, then I taught for 35 years. It's going to be, you know, the same thing over and over again. You would think I changed it every year. I changed the way I presented it. I changed the way I showed it. I changed the way I asked questions, because you got to keep it interesting to yourself as a teacher as it is to the students who are just learning it for the first time. And again, as a teacher, you can't take anything personally. Students sometimes hate school. Sometimes they hate chemistry. They hate the class you're teaching. You can't take that personally. They've got to take it because of mandates of the state or the federal government, and you just got to deal with it. You got to make it interesting to them as well. That's why teaching can be hard. And
you know,
here's the last. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I just talking about good teachers. Some maybe an example of a teacher that was not so good. When I was in first grade, one day I forgot to bring a permission slip to school, and the teacher made me stand in the trash can for
a
period of time. I don't remember how long. However, I was one of the fortunate ones, because while I was in the trash can, I didn't get smacked with the ruler, which some kids do.
I tell you, a teacher can make a school excited for kids, or they can make kids hate school. And it starts out early. The early grades are the most often the culprits in doing this. But I'm afraid that As we all have memories of a great teacher, we can also have those memories of a bad one, and they persist as long as the good ones do. Anyway, asking great questions was the last great achievement of a great teacher, and I'm just going to give you one more song here before we have to leave today, and this is the day of the week that most teachers hate the most.
And maybe just one more thing, just a reminder that, you know, WGXC is a community radio station, and that my opinions or Bill's opinions are not necessarily those of the station. And we're always looking for programming ideas. Bill will give you information if you have some suggestions for this show.
All right, here we go with the teacher's worst day of the week.
Monday.